You are tuned in to a fireside chat with Zany Mystic. Join us now on another exciting metaphysical journey. Relax, tune in, drop out, and take a seat by the fire as we explore new realms and possibilities. This is Magenta Pixie. You can find me at magentapixie.weebly.com. But now, here is Zany Mystic and guest. Enjoy the show.
Greetings, and welcome to A Fireside Chat with Zany Mystic. I'm your host, Lance White. Tonight, my guest is Anne Kreielkamp. Anne received a doctorate in philosophy from Boston University in 1972 and has been pushing personal, cultural, and philosophical boundaries ever since. A professional astrologer for over 30 years, she is also a mother, grandmother, published author, editor, and social activist. In 2009, she established the Green Acres Neighborhood Garden, a public garden on her own land. Also in 2009, she began to attend UFO conferences and to read, I'm reading here, I've got to get my glasses on, avidly in this highly politicized, disinformation-riddled, secretive, mind-bending, outrageous, and wondrous field. With her exopermaculture site, she hopes to bridge these two worlds within herself to meet, share, and learn from others who explore the same split within themselves and to cross-fertilize the above with the below. You can sign up for her free daily newsletter, which is incredibly good, at www.exopermaculture.com. In fact, I was just reading one of these before the show. It's excellent. So now let's welcome Anne to the show. Hi, Anne. How are you?
I'm good. How are you, Lance?
I'm wonderful. Now that I'm talking to you, I have admired your writing for maybe years. It's been a long time. And you're one of the people, of all the blogs I read, you know, Laura Bruno and Jean Haynes and a few others, yours really is up at the top of the heap. It really is one that I check every day because it's excellent, that's why. So
thank you.
So maybe we can talk a little bit about what exopermaculture means and how you got into the permaculture movement, or we can talk about anything you want to start with.
No, I think that's a good start. EXO permaculture. I got into permaculture because a man who lived in back of me said to me, "You should take the permaculture course." They were giving it here. There's two teachers that are living here, and I said, "Why?" And he said, "Because it'll help you see the world in a different way. It'll teach you how to see."
Mm.
And I was like, "I'm always interested in that."
Right.
I mean, that just, he got me right there. And so I did, and within the first 2 hours of hearing the first introductory lecture, I realized that permaculture truly is what we need to, quote, save the world, unquote, because it can remediate anything, you know, deserts, landmine fields. I mean, there's a man in Austria who has fruit trees growing on a mountainside.
Wow. Huh.
It's just an astonishing design science, and that works with nature in a way that both integrates the human into nature and also helps nature produce even more. So it enhances what's going on. Whatever's going on, it will enhance.
Mm-hmm.
So, but it requires a shift in thinking. It's basically systems thinking, applied to gardens, but it's not just gardens. The garden of the human community, for example, In the permaculture course, the second half of it is doing a practicum on some kind of design. And the teacher suggested that I do a design for actually three of us, because three of us lived in this neighborhood who were in the course, that we do a design for the neighborhood, a permaculture design for the neighborhood. And so we did, and it was a five-day long, you know, head-scratching exercise, because it was like, how do we design a neighborhood to for optimum, you know, optimum health, wellness, abundance, and so forth? What does that mean? Mm-hmm. And so that started the whole process of me relocalizing myself, actually localizing myself for the first time, I should say, because I've always been like a bird on a branch wherever I am. I've always been just flying from here to there and not landing.
Too. Yeah, I know that. Me too.
Yeah, and I remember one time I heard Gary Snyder speak. I was in Jackson Hole at the time. I was living there in a yurt, 20 years in a 20-foot yurt in the mountains of Wyoming. And, I mean, living there, yes, but that was like a launching pad for me to go in many places. And I wasn't grounded there. I knew I wasn't grounded there. I had never been grounded anywhere except in my own body. I very much have grounded into my own body from a long time ago. To me, that has been primary to keep myself centered in this world, is to really work with my body as a partner and treat it extremely well and know that the body is the antenna for Earth. My body is an antenna for Earth. So grounded in that sense, knowing that how I treat my body is how I treat the Earth. So, you know, I knew that for a long time. But when I moved to Bloomington, Indiana, I didn't even know that I would like it. I mean, the only reason I was coming was because my husband wanted to go to law school. And so he wanted to go to Indiana University and said, he said, I know you're going to like it because it's like Ann Arbor 20 years ago. You know, I had told him 2 years earlier that I wanted to move to a college or a small town that was culturally rich and had four seasons, because the Jackson Hole environment was too harsh for me as I'm getting older. And so I wanted something more gentle. And this is what he chose. And he was here for a year, a semester, and then he died of a heart attack. So that launched me here was his death, really. But I want to go back to Gary Snyder, because I was listening to him give a talk in Jackson Hole, and he said, and this really struck me, you've got to pick a place and dig in. And I was like stunned by that remark, because it had never occurred to me to do that. And so that's what I did here. And I didn't even know that I was going to, but when I drove into town, when I was driving into town, I was feeling at home. It was the weirdest experience. Wow. I've never felt at home. And I was feeling at home. And I told Jeff that, my husband that, and he was glad, of course, because he didn't know whether I really would like it. And so ever since then, I've been here. But the actual work of grounding myself and treating that process of grounding as a template for the future for all of us, because that's how I am. I'm a double Sagittarian. You know, everything gets magnified, you might say. Began with the permaculture course. And then after that, the same person said to me, this young man, again, as my guide, said, you know, the house next door to you is for sale, which was true. He said, look at this beautiful lawn that it has on the side with no trees shading it. He said, you should buy that house and make a garden out of it. And I was like, it was still pretty soon after my, you know, in my widowhood, so I was still pretty shaky and not really willing to make that kind of commitment yet. I knew that. And so it was sold. But when it was sold, I felt regret. And that's when I realized I should have bought it. Mm-hmm. And so it came up again a year later, and I instantly bought it.
Oh, good for you.
And so then it was like, okay, I've taken the permaculture course, but it really doesn't teach you how to really dig in and do the gardening itself. It teaches you how to see nature, but not how to actually, you know when this seed goes in and, you know, what mm-hmm. plants like to be with what other plants and, you know, what kind of soils, how do you make soil mm-hmm. for plants and so forth. All the details of gardening and of farming, remain to be learned. And so I thought, well, I'm going to make a garden out of this, but how am I going to do it? So what I did was bring in one of these teachers and start the garden through a series of workshops.
Oh, right.
Right? So I was the sponsor for the workshops. I was the hostess for the workshops. And the first thing we did, the first thing I knew had to happen, I saw from the very beginning that there needed to be a pond at the top.
Uh-huh.
That would be the heart and soul of it, which it is. It's
wow.
a pond that has goldfish and frogs and, you know, lotuses. And it's not for any, you know, mundane purpose or any practical purpose, even though it's practical because we sometimes take the water out of it to feed plants. But because it's very rich with all the fish poop in it. But
right.
It's more that it's an area of contemplation, and it is the heart and soul of the garden, and we all know it. And right next to that is a beautiful, wonderful sitting area, which we have that people can come and do picnics there. Or tomorrow night, for example, we're going to do our monthly potluck for the neighborhood. Will be there.
Mm.
And this whole business of the garden is a... the only commons that we have in the entire neighborhood. There's no parks here. You know, we have a church, but it's not, we can use it, but it's not really our commons. We have nothing that's ours. And it's really important for a neighborhood to have a common area.
And
so this is what we got. And we did it on my private land, and people go, ooh, aren't you worried about, you know, liability? So I checked it out, and I found out that all I had to do was add $1 million liability to my to my insurance for $105 a year. That's
wow. It. Not bad. Now, do
not,
you
not
also
bad.
You also work with, I'm guessing that the answer to this will be a positive, but do you also work with the telluric realms, in other words, the nature spirits and divas, elementals, and so on?
Yes, I do to some extent, though other people here do more than I.
Oh, okay.
I appreciate that aspect. I read the Findhorn books a long time ago.
Mm-hmm,
So I know,
Anastasia and the ringing.
Tune into that with gardening and nature. We did a blessing of the waters ceremony at one point last year where we have a big pink rock. What is that called? Pink quartz or something like that. That's, you know, kind of like a guardian spirit for the pond. So there's a metaphysical understanding of what we're doing. Let's put it that way. What we're doing is creating a space. What we're doing is creating an energy field that hopefully will become richer and richer. And it is rich already. Mm-hmm. Just creating the garden from the very beginning, that meant that life slowed down. And there were more pedestrians walking by. The students, this is a very much a college town, and they weren't rushing by in their cars anymore.
Right.
They were walking past.
Right.
And then we could talk to each other through the fence. We have to have a fence because of deer, but we made a transparent fence. And also, it's a fence that we grow things on. So so the fence is fine, it's actually an enhancement of what we're doing. But Yeah, so that we start to engage with the community here. And and we're creating community, building community. We're doing the hardest thing there is, because in our culture, there's so much centrifugal energy. Go out, go out, go out beyond wherever you are, right? Don't get
right,
your neighbors. What?
Yeah.
What's your neighbors?
It's funny you should be mentioning this, because I'm in a situation where I'm just at the point of looking at doing the very things that you have done. So you're creating
excellent.
A template.
Yes, that's what I'm doing. That is the word I use.
Yeah.
I mean, creating a template for this, and I'm not the only person doing it. It's being done
right.
everywhere.
There are lots of people doing that, but you know, I'm inspired because I never thought of bringing a teacher into my property here to teach
sure.
a class to learn, and that's been a barrier for me on trying to transform this property as it needs to be. So now you're inspiring me.
Excellent.
You know,
yeah, there's, you know, that the permaculturists who've already, you know, who've already been trained, there's a lot of them.
Need
work. They need work. And the second year, by the way, I brought in second generation permaculturists that had been taught by the teacher that had moved here. So that gave them
incredible.
Some experience as teachers.
Wow.
And
wow.
Yeah, so we did the workshops for 3 years. And then, now here's another interesting part to it. And we're talking all, you know, the work of the below. If we're talking about above and below with exopermaculture, blending, bridging above and below is my tagline on it. But we're talking the below, but we're talking about incorporating the above within the below. And so here's another thing that happened. And this is a very archetypal thing in a neighborhood, an archetypal situation developed, whereby one of the things we do is we do partnering with the SPIA, which is the School of Public and Environmental something or other. So it's the part of IU which would be interested in what we're doing. And so we've done partnerships with sustainability classes that they have there, that where they do, you know, some project in the garden as their class. And so we did a cob oven. And the cob oven was going to be for, you know, pizza parties every 2 months to, you know, to just gather the students in the area because they love pizza. And so the cob oven was a project to make a cob oven was a big deal. And it was wonderful because here they were in early November. Luckily, it wasn't too cold out. Stomping, you know, to make cob, you have straw, sand, and dirt. And so you're stomping like, you know, you do old grapes, you know. You're stomping the dirt into the straw and the sand and with your bare feet. And they love that. They love to be into the earth, into their tactile experience. You know, instead of being on the dance floor, be making cob.
You know? Oh, wow. Wow.
And they just enjoyed it so much. And then they had to fashion the oven. So that was like a sculptural problem. And they did that too. And it was just this wonderful afternoon. And then we fired the oven up once, the first time. And then we were going to have a pizza party for it. And the woman across the street, one of the women across the street, one woman in one house across the street, became absolutely furious. The wind happened to blow in that direction that day, which it never does, and she refused to close her windows. And even though she knew that we were only going to do this once every 2 months, she said we had to take it down. That she was going to contact the city.
Wow.
And so as a result of this, I was like, I couldn't believe it, you know. And I found out only when this planning department made an appointment with me and came over here, and the planner said to me, the head planner said, we've been looking at this garden for a while, you know. Of course, I wasn't dealing with the city. I was just doing what I wanted to do. And he said, and so, you know, we don't do anything unless there's a complaint. But we, so let's look at it now and see where you're in compliance and where you're not. And he said, and as far as the cob oven goes, he said, you're going to have to take it down because this is, unless, you know, you want to go through this huge process, which would probably not be worth it to you. He said, the thing is, what you've got to realize is that what you're doing now, everything that you're doing is probably going to be commonplace in like 10 to 15 years. But right now you're the pioneer, so you get the flack. And my role is to, you know, enforce the laws of the city. And so you have one role, I have another. And I totally respected that. He and I, you know, are on great terms. I recognized that we were in a drama together. We were in a play together, right? This is like a movie. And I was playing one role, he was playing another role, and so was this other woman. But to be able to take it, to be able to do what they had made, they insist that they decided I had to do, I had to get to the point where I could do that without being furious. Because I was furious with this woman. I couldn't help it. I was so angry that she would be so small-minded as not recognize what we were trying to do here and to, you know, refuse to accommodate anything at all. And it took me, I spent 5 months contemplating this situation. And I came to the point where I started to recognize that this woman was a mirror for me. She has the same size. She's about the same age. She has a little dog just like I do. She's just as pugnacious. She's just as determined. The only difference is that I'm aware. But I was seeing her and hating her, meaning I was hating myself.
Right. Bingo.
And I was seeing her, and then to go even deeper, I started to recognize that she was so insistent because she doesn't feel like she has any control in her life, and this is one place she can have some control. And so I started to recognize her suffering. And that was the thing that just neutralized the fury completely.
And so
once that was done, I could do what I could do. Then I could do a creative act to move the process along, which didn't feel awful then, right? And what I did was, what came to me immediately, as soon as I had cleared this energy, what came to me, meaning neutralized my own emotion, what came to me was, we could hold a ceremony of impermanence. And ceremoniously smash the cob oven. After first doing, you know, each of us taking a piece of paper and writing down things that we no longer need. And having a tiny little fire and talking about it. And then we had this big hammer that each of us hammered it 3 times. There were like a dozen of us there. And then we took the pieces and scattered them around the garden, and each person took a piece home with them.
That is beautiful. That truly is the essence of transformation. And
yes,
that story is... it really is it's like one of the master storytellers has shared something in the tribe for us all to get what we can get from it. And it's a beautiful story. It has so much depth and wisdom to it that it's something you can draw on over and over and find something new in it.
The thing is so archetypal. Now, then, just the aftermath. It took 2 years for her to soften her hardness towards me.
Okay.
And how that happened was, every time I would pass her in the car, I would wave and she would turn away. Or she'd be out, you know, each time out with her aging little dog. Or, you know, I'd say, hi, Lois, as I was passing her house, and she would go back up the stairs so she wouldn't have to encounter me. She was snubbing me, you know, very, very definitely for a long time. And I knew that it was, but I was feeling her suffering. And yet I knew that I wanted to be able to soften this too, you know, eventually, hopefully. And so one day there was some other problem that made her run up to my porch and be furious. And I just opened the door and I said, Lois, neighborliness goes two ways. It goes both ways. And every time I pass you, you turn away. You refuse to say hello to me. And that feels horrible. And she changed, just like that.
Wow.
It was my vulnerability, I think, that was needed.
Yep. And you had to reveal yourself to her, bare your soul, in a sense, in order for her to get the same message that you had gotten a couple of years before.
Exactly. And so it's gradually, ever since then, every time I pass her, we have a little conversation. You know, we have a little conversation. It's getting easier and easier for her now.
I don't mean to cut you off, but you have so much wealth to share. And I'd like to touch with your astrological background and with the current transits, with the Grand Cross and everything. I'd really like to tap into your knowledge of astrology and get your take on that as well.
Okay.
Are you there?
What would you like to do? You mean talk about the Grand Cross or talk about my journey with astrology?
Well, I in particular, the energies of right now, the Grand Cross that we just kind of are coming out of, and how you see that in terms of the whole, and you can even tie it into exopolitics if you like, or the exo aspect of the permaculture. So
let's see. First of all, astrology deals with the solar system normally, right? Mm-hmm. And that's like our local area. Part of the universe. Just, you know, it's just the planets of this solar system and how they keep changing their relationship to one another, their relationships to one another in different configurations, and how that impacts us. And I should say how it's mirrored here, impact. I don't know about causality, but it's mirrored here because everything mirroring everything else. So this Grand Cross is an extremely significant configuration because it involves these two outer planets, Uranus and Pluto, which between 2012 and 2015, are making a 90-degree angle to one another, the first opening square from the conjunction they had with each other in the late 60s.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So it's the first turning point since the conjunction. In other words, the seeds that were planted in the late 60s are now starting to sprout.
Okay,
they're now starting to come above the earth, you might say. You're starting to be able to see what that was about, what that can lead to. And so it's something that astrologers noticed before it happened, that this would happen, you know. And I knew this would happen, that the 60s would come alive again. And in a huge way, that marijuana is being legalized all over the place. I never expected that. And a part of me, you know, I'm sure a part of you too, wonders what the game is that they would allow this. But anyway, so you have that. And then since last summer sometime, I have to think of when that was, Jupiter also entered the configuration. So you had the square between Uranus and Pluto.
and then the opposition between Jupiter and Pluto and square to Uranus. So you had what's called a T-cross, an opposition and two squares. And the T-cross then involved Uranus, which is in Aries, like, do my thing, me, right now, total impulse, explosiveness, no patience, completely unpredictable, right? Versus Pluto in Capricorn, which is hold the line, keep the status quo right where it is, you know, don't let anything happen, for God's sakes, and create the police state to make sure it doesn't.
Right.
So you've got, you know, the forces of liberation then are pushing on the forces of tradition, or keeping things the way they were. And it's, remember, Pluto means inner hidden wealth, and it's plutocracy is what we're talking about here. And so that square is like, you know, Pluto in Capricorn means ultimately that it's death to the old and rebirth to something where the ashes of the old will be reconfigured in a new way. And so this whole process is doing that. It is, you know, alchemizing the entire structure of the civilization. It's disintegrating it and shifting everything. And so then you put Jupiter in the mix, and Jupiter's in Cancer. So the homeland becomes very important for everyone, right? Cancer, the home. Jupiter expands whatever it touches. So Nevada's ranch, Ukraine's, you know, history with Russia and so forth. These whole issues having to do with being at home, being in my place, having my territory and so forth. You know, are in with it. Okay, so that's there. And then this month, and especially this week, we had Mars, the god of war, but in the sign of Libra, which is where it feels totally uncomfortable, yes, because it's the opposite to where it really wants to be, which is in Aries.
Yeah, right.
And it's going backwards. So, you know, I never really thought that this would lead to any kind of, you know, huge conflagration, even though it still could. But I just thought, it's going backwards and it's in Libra. You know, it's forced to negotiate. It's backing up. It's imploding rather than exploding.
Oh.
And, right? So,
yes,
so.
Right, right.
So, what?
That makes sense.
Excuse me?
I said that makes sense.
Yeah, so that's, you know, that's my sense of what's happening anyway. And I'm just thrilled that it has been so relatively muted, you know. That's the thing. The Grand Cross is inside a kite formation, or a grand trine with a kite in, you know, also, but it's the grand trine that's really important, and it's watery. So it's like smoothing it. It's holding it. It's like I had a image the other day on my blog of, I think of nuclear, you know, spent nuclear rods in their holding tanks.
Oh, yeah.
Right? They're in the water, so they can't fission off. And that's the same thing. It feels like that to me. And so those of us that are aware and are in a meditative space, especially if we can be in a meditative space all day long, right? Just live there, are holding that energy field so that the volatility of the Grand Cross won't become too dangerous.
Right.
And I think the Grand Cross, the feeling of it is of a spinning motion. And if we can feel it like that, it's like spinning things, spinning into some kind of spiraling into evolution. You know, it's just, I just get the sense of spinning, kind of like the Sufis in and we can get that. No longer necessary in your life. And all of us, you have anybody who's aware has been undergoing some kind of implosion to contact the parts of ourselves that are still, you know, gunked up in some way or another with some old shit of some kind, usually having to do with old, that are holding old emotions, revenge or resentment or, you know, fury or, you know, depression or feeling of worthlessness, guilt, shame, all of that stuff. Is pretty boring ultimately and holds us in place. And it's hard to be held in place when the spinning motion is going on. So, and yet the grand trine, it's almost like this watery, this feeling of, you know, mother holding her child, her screaming child, right?
Right.
The screaming child be the grand cross. And the mother holding him, you know, soothing him. And I say him deliberately, soothing him so that he doesn't, you know, just smash everything in the house.
Well, you know, you conjure up images of the birth canal and going into, through the darkness into the light. And
yeah.
So many that I've talked to over the years have been following the Mayan calendar in 2012, and many people were a bit disappointed with the fact that there were no bells and whistles on the day that we all had kind of projected our own images of what might happen. And yet, I'm learning from a number of people that we are now in the birth canal. Everything before that has happened, it's not linear. It's something that occurs in a quantum field, so it's outside of time, and it's continually being adjusted and tweaked so that everything is synchronized in harmonic perfection.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why when we expect things to be differently, we're falling prey to our own projections. But I feel that we're in a birth canal and that we're this watery, you know, just what you said, and there are many who said, well, we might go through 3 days of darkness. Well, maybe on a planetary scale, that's just a millisecond. Maybe that's when the baby is birthed. You know, Gaia Sophia and humanity come out the black hole from a dark black hole universe into a light hole universe.
Yeah.
I mean, anything is possible.
And yeah.
This certainly is, yeah.
I think it's really important to recognize that every single second is a that reality keeps on flashing, right? And so that every single second you can flash it in a new way.
Mm-hmm.
That wherever we put our attention, that's what materializes.
Yeah.
So just, you know, really, really discipline ourselves to hold our attention on, you know, creation, basically. And being aware of the destruction, being aware of all of that, but not attaching to it. And certainly not letting it get you down, but being aware of it and holding it in compassion as we feel ourselves moving forward, moving into a world which is, you know, which is, I like to think of it as every local place, whether it's me inside my own body or me inside my house or me inside my neighborhood or me inside my city, me inside my region. The power is always at the bottom. The power is always with the inside of the smallest thing, right? And that's true for every single point in the world, so that everything is equally important and everything has equal power.
Yeah.
And the bottom is the power is always running up from the bottom and running out towards others from the bottom. And so we recognize that that's where the real primal creative power of the universe is. And if we focus on this faux power, F-A-U-X power, that, you know, that thinks it's in power, on the so-called power in the hierarchical realm of the matrix or the
the cabal, whatever you want to call it, it's just a game. Mm. They're going to play as long as we know.
But if we don't even, just don't even focus on that. Focus on what you're doing right here, right now.
Yep.
Right now.
And being present is the solution to everything, because
absolutely,
we can't have one foot in the past and one in the future and piss on the present.
Yes, exactly. I used to say as a hippie, they'd always say, well, be here now. And I always used to say, yeah, but the now can be large or small, you know.
And very good.
It's not a point. If we think of it as a point, it's not a point. It can.
Yeah, I used to love Ram Dass.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I still do.
Yeah, I do too. Well, yeah, he's still alive too.
So you did exopermaculture, however.
Tell us about that.
You gave the little spiel that I gave on the website of the two parts of myself. You know, there's two communities that I belong to, in other words, that I feel at home within, and they don't feel at home with each other.
Right.
So that's the problem, and that made me feel a little skitsy. So I decided to do this blog, and it was just weird because it was just one afternoon. I just all of a sudden set it up on WordPress, and I'm not even very good at this stuff, but it just came through. And from then on, I've been doing it. It's really my main focus. The focus on local community and so forth, I'm doing because we have to do it, you know?
Yeah.
It's me. My nature is more like in the idea realm and in the realm of communication than it is, you know, on the ground. But it's a wonderful balance to have to go outside and, you know, pick berries or
yeah.
You know. I mean, it's really good for me to have that very, you know, very sensuous experience of life as well as the ideational and spiritual experience. So I'm doing the exopermaculture thing myself. So exo meaning what surrounds something or what's on the outside of something. And it's kind of a play on the whole exopolitics thing too, because I was at a UFO conference actually in Laramie, Wyoming in 2001 or something like that, a smaller conference, not the ones I've been going to lately, where Alfred Weber talked for the first time about exopolitics.
Uh-huh.
And he's the guy that really brought that word into being. And that really fascinated me, the idea of politics that's beyond the earth, you know, that includes more than the earth. And it never occurred to me to think that way, and linguistically either to use that word that way to add exo to something, and so I added exo to permaculture. Ultimately everything is permaculture. I mean, it's kind of a joke to call it exopermaculture because everything should be looked at as a system, but not a closed system, an open system. I don't really think there are any closed systems in nature. And because there aren't any closed systems, then all of our experiments that we do scientifically where we think we can have closed systems, are a joke, because there's something beyond that's always influencing whatever you're doing. And
yeah,
so you can't have.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely.
It's absurd. It's absurd.
I remember Terrence McKenna used to talk about this period of time, and that there will become increasing novelty, and he foreshadowed UFOs everywhere. I mean, just things that we can't even imagine.
Yeah.
Many of us kind of complain inwardly and outwardly that we don't see enough in the skies, but, you know, we may have to say, be careful what we wish for, because they may be coming out of the woodwork at some point, we'll be thinking, oh, wait a minute now, I didn't ask for all that.
That's good. That's really good. Yeah. I had a very weird experience just the other night. I was
I wake up between, I put this on the blog, you might have seen it. I wake up between 2 and 4, which is not unusual. You know, it's a liver time in Chinese medicine. And the liver, of course, is the organ that has to do with anger and frustration and anger mostly. The gallbladder is frustration. But and the liver is a Sagittarian organ too. So, you know, the fire is huge fire. So that's a fiery time then between 2 and 4, and it's hard for me to sleep. And it's not always the case, but it sometimes is. And what I've noticed lately, especially, I've noticed that the energies that I pick up between 2 and 4, I'm realizing they're not my own. All the emotions that I'm feeling are not my own. So I'm kind of like surfing the collective unconscious. That's what I call it.
Right. Yeah.
Surfing the collective unconscious and to be present with it, just being present to this. And it's almost like that, the grand trine, you know, holding the grand cross again. And I was doing that the other night, and all of a sudden, somewhere outside my window, I heard a bell 3 times, just like this, ping, ping, ping. That's it.
Huh.
Isn't that
interesting.
Wild?
Interesting. Interesting. Yeah. Huh. Yeah. Very interesting.
That's what I thought. And what it felt like was everything's okay.
Uh-huh. Yeah. You're picking up the signs for sure. I was called to look out into the sky when I let my dog out yesterday night. And often when I look up into the sky, I kind of scan for anything that looks a little unusual. And often I'll see a light that looks like a plane, but it's got a different energy to it, and it doesn't seem to be moving. And then if I look at it, and it'll move a little up, down, side. I mean, so then, of course, my attention is focused, and I follow it as long as I can. You know, but there are lots of things that are coming that, in our near future, I feel, due to this opening that's created from the bookends of the 60s that will be similar to a golden age. I mean, it will be all of this horror, all of the horrors of the non-transparent, corrupt governments and the secret projects and black ops and three-letter agencies. They, as far as I can see, this is all part of the old patriarchal art paradigm and archetypes that are falling, you know, just like Rome did and Egypt and the rest of them. We're going to see a big fall, and it's not going to be of all of us. It will be, you know, the people who are committed to self-serving, selfish, greedy interests and can't see past their noses.
Right. Yeah, though I don't think it'll be easy for anybody, just because we are in the matrix. We do depend on it, unless you're completely off grid.
I don't know anybody that really.
Very few of us are.
There are some people, but
really, I think that is a false solution to think that you can be independent. I mean, that's ridiculous.
I agree.
So. So we got to shift the key is, my feeling is, the key is that where we live, our neighborhoods are, they need to turn into functioning villages, basically, so that we live and work in place, and we don't need to travel so much, so we don't need the, you know, the cars, the oil economy so much, and that we grow our own food as much as possible, and that we don't work so much. Why work? I mean, working is stupid unless you really love it. It's just slavery.
Right.
And the more we can shift to a gift economy rather than the money economy, and I, you know, yes, trading would be like the interim, but gifting, just every person giving their full self to the world because they are full, they feel full, they sense their own worth. And everybody is unique, and everybody is tremendously skilled and tremendously talented. And you can you imagine the flowering if everybody was actually being themselves?
Wow. Yes, I have seen a vision of that, and I fully empower that, and I am completely aligned with it. Where we, some of us are leading the way in moving towards a gifting society that does not need to rely on the energy of gold or diamonds or money to survive, because that is where the distortions come in, the manipulation enters, and then you have barriers that keep you from experiencing things directly. And isn't that what the church is all about? To keep us baptized in stupidity and ignorance, so that we can't make that connection directly, and we have to use a priest or an intermediary, and then there's another one beyond that. It's like buying drugs. You can go to your street dealer, you can go directly to the maker, you know? I always thought it would be wiser to go to the source directly. And I think we're seeing a flowering of this, and you personify that, because you're doing it on
so many
different
levels.
Well,
I'm doing what I can.
So many different levels. Yeah,
I lost you right there. Say that again.
That you are, you're creating the what we're talking about on many different levels, and that we're embodying here. By living it and showing. We don't even have to talk about it. But this show is about talking about things, so that people can hear, and in their listening, they can say, oh, okay, it's all right to be myself.
Yes,
it's all right to express myself fully in the things I love doing, and I can leave my job that I can't stand, working under fluorescent lights in closed buildings with people that are, you know, jerks and the rest of it. I can leave that.
Well, they're suffering too, remember? You know, everybody hates their jobs that they act like that with each other.
That's right. Mm-hmm. That's right. It's a pyramid of suffering. And I would love to see it toppled.
What?
Well, Anne, we've only got a couple minutes left, and I want you to share a brief thought with us and your websites before we have to sign off. And I just want to thank you in advance for being here, because I just love you. I love your work, and I would love to have you back as well.
I would love that, too. I would suggest that people go to another of the sites that I run. It's a static site, but it gives the visions and values of the Green Acres Neighborhood Eco Village. And this is something that other people might aspire to create their own, you know, the visions and values for their own neighborhood. And it's called GANECOvillage.org, which is Green Acres Neighborhood Eco Village. But the way the website is GANECOvillage.org. And that might help people to start to imagine what it's going to be like when their community is also flourishing. And it's funny, because I want to say one more thing here, and I have an even bigger vision that I can't even talk about yet, but it came from a lecture that I heard from David Orr, who runs is with the Oberlin Project, which is a town gown that's another college town, and they're doing sustainability with both the city and the college. And he said, in order to get this happening, you have to learn to have lunch with lots of different kinds of people. You still there?
Beautiful.
And
said.
So, and that's what I've started to do. I'm starting this program for myself, of having lunch with lots of different kinds of people from lots of different areas, all of whom I know have a piece of whatever this is that we're doing here that makes Green Acres Neighborhood into a pilot project for the university as it shifts its mission to become more relevant to the 21st century. Because as David Orr said, any motivated person can educate themselves on YouTube. You don't need universities to have the same function as they had before.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And
beautiful. Well, yeah, Anne, we're almost out of time. Can you make sure you mention where people can sign up for your wonderful daily blog?
Yeah, exopermaculture.com. Just go up there and go to it and get signed up if you want to get that mini shake. They post about 4 days, so it's quite a few.
Wonderful. Well, Anne, thank you for coming on tonight. And my hat's off to what you're doing, and keep it up. We'll come back and talk another time. Thanks a million.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Zanny Mystic, Lance White.
All right. Good night, everybody.